Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
105.3 FM HD2, Kenner, New Orleans. It's the Food Show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice. Nice to be here with you and also with Mary Ann. And all of us are enjoying ourselves here.
And Gregory is here, too.
And Gregory
Hello, I'm still here.
Oh, Gregory is so titillated to talk about these fancy schmancy restaurants.
We were trying to pull together all those lyrics. All those lyrics with all those Hawaiian.
I'm one of those people that ruined restaurants like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you are, because that was something that New Orleans needed, and it really needs another one like that.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so Lascaux. Okay, so Lascaux was the predecessor to Louis the 16th.
That was even higher end than Louis the 16th was. Sure.
Yeah, but they're both the Smith brothers or Smith.
Yeah. The Smiths had. They owned both hotels, the St. Louis and the St. Anne at the time, and they also had the Marie Antoinette too. At that time, the reason why I know this is not only was I a patron, but in college I actually worked there, and so I had an inside look at it, and that's how I first fell in love with fine wines and fine dining. I said, "Boy, oh boy, I can't wait to have enough money to come here and eat myself." But what really makes a great institution like Louis XVI was, and I believe it was. It was like 28 years. If you put it all together, it was about 28 years. It had its run in both locations. But there was one guy in particular, the maitre d' of that place for like 25 years, was a very distinguished guy. His name was Antoine Comenzulli. Perhaps you remember him, Tom. Antoine.
I do remember him. And you know what his last gig was?
I don't know.
Commander's Palace. He was at Commander's Palace running the front door for quite a while.
Well, that was perfect.
But then he retired. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know he put both of his kids through school, because I went to school with one of his sons at Brother Martin, and I think one of them's a dentist and the other one's a doctor. Talk about a guy driven by detail. He was a French-Tunisian. I mean, totally French, but his parents, I think, were in diplomatic corps, and he was raised in Tunis. However, he came to New Orleans I think he was in his 20s. I think he came here to go to school, too, at Tulane as well. But talk about about detail. He knew just how to sharpen a knife, for example, how to saber a bottle of champagne, just how to slice that that salmon, paper thin so you could read a newspaper through it. And he was very adamant about teaching all the waiters and assistant waiters and the captains how to do this stuff.
It was
an education.
What I'm trying to get to here is that salmon you're talking about, this was smoked salmon, and they smoked it themselves, and it was extremely elegant. And
they
really
did a grovelox, too. And they also did a grovelox, too.
Gregory is so excited, I'm worried he's going to soil himself. Go ahead.
No, I'm not. Because I think you're probably going to get a few other callers that do. I mean, even if you ate there once, it was a memorable occasion, because it was just done with such taste and such a fun. It wasn't fanfare. It was just, you kind of expected it to be that way. And, there wasn't a blotch on a napkin, you know what I mean? I mean, it was just, here I am sounding like a yacht talking about an elegant French restaurant. But
it's an interesting thing.
When I was there, Daniel Barnot had moved on, and there was a chef in the interim, and unfortunately he died rather young, and he was quite good. He actually got a Dorona Award for Louis XVI, and then Agnès Bellet came on, and
she's still there.
Agnès Bellet, okay.
She is still there, you know.
Talk about a terrific person. Talk about somebody who knows her food. She was from the Côte d'Azur, you know, the Marseille Nice region. Boy, she knew her seafood, and she knew how to make a Chateaubriand, and of course the beef Wellington. And they also had an unusual filet mignon they called the Saint Hébert, which they would marinate in wine overnight with garlic and shallots and all that.
I've never heard of that. What is it?
It's like a 16-ounce filet mignon, and it's marinated in red wine. It's Burgundy. She would always use a Cote d'Aron with shallots, garlic, and herbs de Provence, and they would let that sit for 24 hours, and then, you know, there was always like a dozen of them in the cooler ready to go. You know, they didn't want to make too many of them. But the thing is, they were so red from the wine. You really had to be a good cook to know when it was, you know, when it was medium rare or rare or well done, you know.
You've caught me with that, because I've seen that dish, but I've never heard that name before.
It was called Filet Saint-Hubert.
Now that you say it, it all came running back to me. But that really was something. And the marinade you're talking about, they would give you like two or three pretty substantial pieces of this, and that would sit in the refrigerator for days. And it was so tender by the time you got to eat it that it was really different and just fantastic.
I used to love when I had off time watching Chef and her assistants and her sous chefs prepare all these sauces from the demi-glace that was going on for 48 hours. You know what I'm saying, Tom?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just incredible. Talk about an education. And then on the other hand, you had Antoine Commandouli giving me an education about wine. Talk about somebody who was a enophile, and he was also a sommelier. Even though I'm not one, I could probably pass any test anybody gave me. But
that's where
I really got my passion for that stuff. And then from the execution about how to dress a table, how to make sure every place setting was just so, you know.
Yep.
And the Garadon service. I miss Garadon service. I don't know why restaurants don't do that.
Because
first of all, nobody knows what it is.
Nobody has.
They don't care.
Well, Caesar salad. One
more thing. The Caesar salad at Louis XVI was something to remember, too.
Made to order. All
the restaurants do Café Brûlée, Brûlot and all that stuff. But I'm talking about when they did that tableside Caesar salad over there, and I got trained how to use it. You know, just using a partially poached egg yolk and mixing with the garlic and the salt. And then, no anchovy unless the customer wanted it, by the way. So...
That's a fact, because
a lot of customers don't want it.
Julia Child, no less than Julia Child, said that she knew the owner, the guy who created
Caesar Cartesi.
And she knew him personally, and said that Caesar said that there are no anchovies in a Caesar salad.
Really?
Yeah.
So how did that get started then?
I think there was somebody liked the saltiness of it, the umami of it, I guess. I don't know. I don't ever have Caesar salad with anchovies. Anyway, that was a sight to be seen. I could talk about Louis XVI for like a million years, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I think you could. But let me ask both of you the same question. If Agnès Bellet is the incredible chef that you both think
she's
she
a wonderful
is.
Woman.
And I've heard that from other places too. Mm-hmm. Why does no one know who she is?
Well, for years, she was at Cafe Degas before she ended up at Louis XVI. And why? She doesn't really care about fame and all that stuff. She's been in a few cooking demos over the years. And she's just a little country
she's
girl.
She's just quiet. She's quiet, huh?
She's quiet. She's very.
Quiet, yeah.
She's apparently brilliant, though.
Very, very
absolutely. In the kitchen, she's a master. She is.
Yeah.
She's just incredible to watch. And I.
Well, you know where she is now, huh? You know where she is now.
I think she's still doing stuff for the St. Louis Hotel over there at Louis XVI. I think all they do is parties and brunches.
She's with the group that owns, I think it's the Audubon Cottages Hotel Mazarin, whatever the name of that group is. I think it's the New Orleans Hotel Collection. She is sort of their corporate chef, I think.
She gives all the advice. She's like an advisory, kind of oversees it. Kind of like what's the lady who works for the Brennan Group who used to have Baco. Tom, you remember her. Haley.
Haley Gable. She's the corporate chef for the group. Brennan. Yeah, she's the corporate chef for that group. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I love this show, and I've talked too long. Thank you for letting me go on about Louis the 16th.
Well, I wouldn't have had the heart to stop you. Your passion was just jumping out of the phone, Gregory.
I just happen to know that Tom loved it back then as much as I did.
I know. You and Tom. It's too bad that you'd be the only customers.
You had to wear a coat and tie every night. All right.
Yeah.
So long,
anyway.
Kids. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye. 260-6368. If you are as passionate about Louis the 16th
or
food
that
kind of dining, then we'd love to hear from you. This is the day that Louis the 16th opened and brought Danielle Bonneau, unleashed Danielle Bonneau onto New Orleans. Where is he now? He's in France a lot, isn't he?
Danielle
Bonneau.
Every time I go there, I see her there. She's
Danielle?
Hardworking.
Are you talking about Agnes or Danielle?
Oh, I'm Agnes,
sorry. Agnes? Danielle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Agnes.
My mistake.
That's Agnes. Yes.
But, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we were talking about Louis XVI and about fancy French food and a style of service that you will likely never see. Is it really?
Yeah.
Where, Tom?
Okay.
Where?
Well, you discovered one of them, that place over there on Charter Street. 1500 Charter Street.
Where?
1500. No, it's
Justine?
Justine, yeah.
Justine isn't doing that kind of service.
Maybe not quite.
No.
It's very French.
It's very French. And, I mean, there's actually quite a few great little French places in town, but they're not doing that. I'm talking about that kind of service. I mean, if you're not going to at some place like Commander's, you're not going to see that again.
Yeah, that's
I mean, I'm sure someplace in New York they're probably doing that. Steve presents himself.
I am here.
The Food Show.
Okay.
I like a waiter that says, you want to keep that fork for the next course? And I think that's a good waiter.
Steve,
Know which fork to use for this and that. Here, keep that fork because you're going to need it for your dessert or something like that. That's gourmet for me. Yeah.
I'm glad that you have presented yourself. I thought you were in hiding.
No. I'm just.
Have you been listening to
busy.
The show? I've been summoning you to present yourself.
I listen sometimes. I got other things going on in my wonderfully exciting life.
Okay. You know? Well, you know that you owe Tom an apology.
For what? What does he owe me an apology for?
Because Tom was, in fact, correct about the Snickers.
Oh,
they say something
on.
Different on every one.
Okay, have you seen that really amusing campaign that they're doing where they have someone who changes, like, the first time I saw it was the Brady Bunch. And, you know, Marsha. They have a group of people, and then a person changes into that person, and they say, you're grumpy if you haven't had a Snickers. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. They have now decided to really up their game on that campaign, which is a brilliant campaign. I have to say so myself.
You mean they're starting
and
it again?
All of the emotions that are chronicled in that campaign are now on the Snickers bars.
Well, what do you know?
For a limited time.
I'll
give you a limited apology then.
A limited apology? What's
Wait,
the limitation?
Why a limited apology?
Because you said it's for a limited time that they're doing this. So
well, I know, but I think it
limited.
Should be a full-fledged apology.
Okay, I'm on my knees right now.
Okay.
I apologize. For once, you were right.
You know, if I cared, I would accept.
I'm looking now for the list of emotions that you will see on Snickers bars, and I will present it in just a minute.
Well, Tom, you said if you really cared, I agree. I had my feelings surgically removed, and it has made life a whole lot nicer.
Took care of that.
Tom used to say when we first got married that he's as sensitive as a cold toilet seat, and I have to say that's true. That is an accurate portrayal of his level, the spectrum of emotions that Tom can summon up.
Anybody remember what the book was?
I don't know that I care to know.
Okay.
But go there ahead. Some other people right. might. Go ahead.
Huh? What book?
What book is it?
I want to see if anybody actually knows. It's one that everybody who lived a life during the 60s. Would know about this.
Hmm. Well, I was there, but
well, that's not me. I'm too young for that.
You're a liar.
The quote again, in case you missed it.
I don't know if I like the level of excitement that you evoked with that laugh. That was a guffaw.
I'm the same age as you
that
are.
That was a guffaw, and I do not appreciate your guffaw. Go ahead.
I'm the same age as you, so that's quite acceptable.
Okay, I'm still looking, and as soon as I find it, I'm going to announce.
Doug's running me off again.
I know. He does that to us too. All right, we have to take a break. Thank you, Steve.
Bye, Doug.
260-6368 is the number. You're listening to
Enjoy Your Snickers.
WL 105.3 FM HD2. All right. I have the list now for the Snickers campaign.
You have the what?
The list of the Snickers campaign. So you may likely see, instead of Snickers on a Snickers bar, you could see the emotions cranky, grouchy, confused, irritable, impatient, complainer, whiny, curmudgeon, ornery, testy, snippy, rebellious, feisty, sleepy, loopy, goofball, forgetful, drama mama, dramatic, princess, and spacey. You could likely see any of those on a Snickers bar in lieu of the word Snickers.
That's right. And I saw that just by accident. I don't even like Snickers. Yep. But there, I saw one. I said, somebody screwed this up because that's not the name of Snickers. And I picked one up, and I picked up another, and there were no two alike.
Yeah.
And I thought, this will be a good thing to talk about on the radio, and it was that day. And they kept charging away with it, and we've been talking about it ever since then, with the exception of some people who take me to task on that and say that's impossible.
Well,
but we have proven them wrong.
Well, that very
wrong,
night,
I tell you,
that
wrong.
That very night, we got an email from Thomas Corona.
Yeah.
Who sent in the article that I just referenced about this campaign, which is a clever, clever campaign.
I
do say so. Anyway, 260-6368. My goodness, we do skip around.
What do you mean?
It's all under the loose tent of food, but wow, we do cover some territory on this show. So if you would like to introduce yet another topic, then give us a call. Or we were talking with some enthusiasm, for sure, about Louis the 16th and that kind of ultra-French restaurant.
A lot of other restaurants like that, back in the day.
Yeah, but that day is over, Tom, I think. I'll bet you if you go to New York a lot and you dine out at really fancy schmancy kind of places in New York, there are probably maybe one or two restaurants in New York that are still doing that kind of service, but I can't imagine finding them too easily.
I know a lot of people in New York City, they just they dress up all the time. I'll tell you what, we can prove that easily.
Okay.
Right next to where you're sitting.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of magazines.
Yeah.
Grab one, and male or female, you will see that there will be a lot of very well-dressed people on the back cover or some other place of the New Yorker magazine, where the people really do dress pretty well.
Okay.
So, one of the few places. Here, let's see what we come up with.
All right.
I'm just going to do at random. Let's see. This one's kind of interesting. Yeah. It's a cartoon, actually. And on it is a guy who's wearing a suit with tie, standing up there with his hands hanging down. And the what do you call the thing that you
caption?
Stand on? Caption.
Oh, the pedestal?
The pedestal. Thank you very much.
Yes. I know that because I live on one.
A man for all seasons except winter or summer. Oh, that was the joke part of it. But there he is. He's wearing his jacket and tie. Let's pick another one just at random. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. And people, that's not even.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Tom, because these cartoons have nothing to do with real life on New York and in New York, and I don't know what New York you're going to, but I don't.
Cartoon.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ridden the New York subway lately, but there's not a whole lot of of dressing up going.
Well,
on
here's another one, and I just grabbed it, and it depicts a guy wearing a suit. He is with a lady who is really well dressed up. And then there is what looks like a whole turkey that the waiter is holding on to. The waiter is wearing all except the coat of a jacket, and they are flaming something in the middle of the dining room. Now, if that's not classy, I don't know what you're looking for.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm
see
looking
that
for
look?
Either.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, 260-6368 is the number. What did you say, Doug?
What? Burnt turkey.
Okay.
Didn't he used to play for somebody? I forget.
What is that apropos of, Doug?
Oh, I see.
Flaming turkey. Yeah. I don't know what he's. I was reading while Tom was talking, so I don't even. I can't even identify with that subject, whatever it was. Anyway, going back to your almanac, which is sort of the basis for our show every day. Thank God for it. Happiness is finding three olives in your martini when you're hungry. That's a quote from Johnny Carson.
Yep.
I don't know anything about martinis in olives. I mean, olives in martinis. What makes a dirty martini?
A dirty martini is made when you take some of the water that the olives are sitting in.
Yeah.
In a jar. Usually,
uh-huh.
And you dump that into the cocktail after you mix it, and then you put some of that in, and it's called dirty.
Okay, so you never get your martinis dirty because you don't even like olives. Okay, I eat your olives out of a martini, but when you get a dirty martini, does it kind of taste like olive juice?
Yeah, and a lot of people really love them. One of my best friends.
It's kind of salty, I would think.
He drinks them all the time.
Well, I would think that if I ever drank a martini, and I never will, the most you can get out of me is a sip. But I would imagine that I would be more inclined to drink a dirty martini than a clean martini because it would taste maybe somewhat like olive juice instead of gin. I mean, I don't know how strong that flavor is, all I get out of a martini is gin, and I'm not a huge gin fan.
Well, we are going to stop short of.
Oh, it's funny that we're doing
the great.
Huh? Go ahead. What?
The great poem on the subject of martinis.
Yes, I was talking to someone about that just yesterday.
We cannot do it on the radio.
I think you've done it on the radio a bunch of times.
I may have come to the thing of it.
You've done it a bunch of times.
Yeah. I love a
good
martini.
This is Dorothy Parker, who
Dorothy
is
Parker,
just
right.
a brilliant wit.
I love a good martini. One or two at the best.
Most. You have to say most. No,
most,
you have
all right.
to say most because most rhymes with the last end of the poem, Tom.
Okay, let's see how it goes. I love a good martini, one or two at the most. After three, I'm under the table. I can't finish this off. If you want to know the rest of this, call me or bump into me at a restaurant and I'll tell you.
You must for sure understand that it's 2019. There's stuff that kids are watching on television.
That's far worse
than what you were just going to say. Actually, Tom, the reason that quote was in your almanac, and I'm getting to it from the bottom now, is that it's National Martini Day.
Oh,
today.
Is it?
Yes,
really?
It is. And so you have something in here about James Bond with his martini shaken, not stirred.
And with vodka, which is what kind of territory?
Well, why? What does that mean?
A martini is a gin drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a... Now, a lot of people would prefer to have their martini made with vodka. But I don't see the point of that because it doesn't really have any taste.
Well, according to you, it says, if you have good, really cold, pure hand-cut ice, a martini should definitely be stirred. Are they most often stirred or shaken?
I think probably more stirred than anything. I don't know. Any bartenders out there, would you call us and give us an answer?
What is the percentage of shaken versus stirred?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Give us a reading on that, would you?
Anyway.
And let me give a little prize for doing this. If you're a real bartender or a professional doing something at a restaurant, call me and tell me the answer to that question. How do you want your martini? Do you want it shaken or stirred or all that? And once we're past that, take a few minutes of shooting the breeze about how great your place is. We'll let that go.
So, it being National Martini Day, you have quite a lot in your almanac about martinis. So, according to you, the martini went out of vogue in the 70s.
Something like that.
But started to be back in vogue in the 90s. I would say martinis are very hot right now,
aren't they? Very hot. And I got hot on them, and I didn't even like them for a long time. But then... one day we went over to, what's the name of that great, great place over on, in the French Quarter?
Bombay Club.
The Bombay Club. Yeah. The Bombay Club made a big, big fuss about martinis.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the number of martinis that were being sold were skyrocketing, and everybody was drinking them again. Isn't that wonderful?
The Bombay Club could make anything cool.
Could be. It was a good place in
its
time.
It's a raffish kind of place, for sure. And they haven't done anything to it. But there's something charming about it, I have to say. It's it would be like an oasis in the quarter. It's a place that you could sort of hide out if you were having an affair or something.
Boy, that's the scariest prospect I've ever heard.
Isn't that a place where isn't that a place where you get behind the curtain in the booths and stuff? Don't they have the booths with the curtains there? I think they do.
Where?
In the Bombay Club.
If they do, it's something new. I don't remember that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I know they have a lot of clubby little booths. I don't know if there are curtains in front of them, but it seemed like they do. And I love their bitty teeny tiny courtyard. It's if you haven't been there, it's kind of worth stopping in because it's a cool place. It really is.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
The artwork in there is particularly one
it's very British.
Drawing.
Very British.
They have a drawing in the men's room, very nicely done with pencil and, and paper. Really, really quite a piece of work.
Yeah. All right. 260-6368 is the number. That's 260-MENU. We're talking about our usual, just the gamut of things that are even loosely related to food. You're listening to WWL 105.3 FM HD2. We are back. Let me tell you about New Orleans hamburger and seafood.
Yeah, a little bit coming from that direction.
Yes.
And we would love to hear from your direction, too, no matter what that is, whatever's on your mind, culinarily speaking, or we can be a little less propped
up and
ask you for anything that you might have on your mind about dining out, dining in, cocktails, not so cocktails, glass of wine, all of these
martinis.
Things that make a difference in how happy a person you are. At least I'm not saying that that's all it takes and that in order to be a happy person, you have to drink and all of that. It's one of those things that you have at your
for 30 years
at your disposal.
Saying, I don't drink or eat enough.
Is it working for you? You seem to be a happy person.
260-6368 is the number. 260-MENU. New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood is where you will find really great hamburgers, and that's why it's called that. They have an extensive menu of hamburgers. They will be crusty on the outside and juicy on the inside, or frankly, any way that you would like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can have them dressed any way that you would like. They also have wonderful seafood. It is greaseless and golden brown and really hot when it comes to the table. It is it's perfectly seasoned, but if you want to kick it up a few notches, you can ask for it to be spicilicious. And you can get that delicious fried seafood in either a platter or on a poor boy. That is New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood, but that's not all.
No,
they
really?
Have,
tell me more.
They have a new thing, a new item on the menu
new
is...
Thing.
Is
Joe Newthing. I've known him for years.
Char-grilled oysters. They have char-grilled oysters now at their 10 locations.
I've got to
they
get over there and try some of those.
Good salads and sandwiches of other kinds. They also have local specialties. New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood very well represents the local cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
Go see them at one of their 10 locations around town, New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood.
Thank you. Thank you
today
for all that encouragement.
Today is also National Croissant Day.
Is it? Do you like croissants?
You know what? If I never ate another croissant in my whole life,
really,
I would be okay.
Uh-huh.
But when I have a croissant, it has to be a really great croissant.
What does that
and
consist
if
of?
If it is a really great croissant, then I am impressed. But I would not ordinarily make a sandwich out of a croissant. I wouldn't go and buy one at a bakery. I guess I like them okay would be the answer to that. Do you remember when we were in Belgium?
Belgium.
And we were
yeah.
in
I'll never forget
Gaunt,
that.
Or whatever.
Which time? The first time or the second
the
time?
The second time, recently, 5 years ago. 5 years ago. And we were staying at that Marriott in what, if you looked at it, would be Ghent.
That's right.
G-H-E-N-T, but they pronounce it
Gaunt.
Yeah.
Gaunt.
And they had these croissants on the buffet, and they were the most extraordinary. I mean, you can't imagine like a buffet croissant in a hotel being great, but it was just divine, these croissants. That was like the croissant of my life. Although I did have a really good one the other day from La Boulangerie, which Mary Lee brought home, and it was that was a good one too. So they're out there, and there are good American croissants, but they're, no, not generally speaking, not my thing.
No, no, me neither. You know, no. What? Can I tell a story about?
No,
no, I can't.
No, go ahead.
No, there was a time, and it's mostly gone now, but it might come back any minute just because of the nature of it, where the bigger hotels in the area would make a big fuss over their baking shop, as they called it. And this would be where they would do all the baking for these big hotels and make it so elegant that it would stand up for the restaurant or the hotel as being one of the reasons you would go there.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was talking with those guys one day. In fact, they wanted me to write an article about it. And I told them that croissant was not as good as I like it. And they said, well, why? What is it that you're looking for? And I said, well, I don't want to have to cut it through with a knife, or do I want to be able to have to tear it apart to get at it? And he said, well, you're probably putting butter on it. And I thought, well, of course you put butter on a croissant, don't you? You do not put butter on a croissant, I learned, because then it really gets tough and really unappealing. And I've fixed that, made that change, and now if ever I get one, I want it to be toasty, light, no butter hanging around, not heavy. And anyway, that's my thinking about a croissant.
Well, when I eat croissants, usually they are, it's in Europe where there is
that would be a good place to look for it.
Yep. Where there's a buffet with cheeses and meats, you know, because they have their continental mm-hmm. breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I never put butter on a croissant because I have a cheese slice or some yeah. meat there to eat with it. So
right.
I wouldn't necessarily be inclined to eat a croissant with butter. But my feeling is if you want to eat a croissant with butter, then go ahead and eat a croissant with
yeah.
butter.
Well, yeah,
even though
not?
It is made mostly of butter. But I wonder, are there any other good croissants in town? La Boulangerie is actually really good.
You know, this is, again, out of town. I remember looking around once while I was in Italy, and the sort of, I'm looking for the word that would indicate the fins of a croissant. You know how it has layers?
Mm-hmm.
And they have some of these that are called...
Sheets? The sheets of croissant?
The sheets, right. That's
the
a good
dough, one. The dough sheets that get rolled up into a croissant.
Yeah. And then in Italy, they make these pastries that are more or less the same idea, except that they're very, very thin, and the Italian word for it means a thousand somethings. And it's like the layered in a thousand, and that's what it looks like. And it's very elegant and very nice to look at and
well, it's supposed
eat.
To be very difficult to make a croissant.
I would, yeah, you really have
you
to
have
put
to
some
have
work in.
You have to have a touch for it.
You do.
And to me, a croissant is not good unless you touch it and it flakes.
Well, we'll call up some of our flaky
it should
friends.
It be very flaky, yeah. I think, a croissant. Anyway, you also have on your gazetteer that these are words to eat by. You usually have a quote from someone, and there's something here that says, bakers of bread rolls and pastry cooks will not buy grain before 11 o'clock in winter and noon in summer, and bakers of large loaves will not buy grain before 2 o'clock. This will enable the people of the town to obtain their supply first. Huh. Bakers shall put a distinctive trademark on their loaves and keep weights and scales in their shops under penalty of having their licenses removed. And that goes back a really long time because that was a quote by Cardinal Richelieu.
Cardinal Richelieu.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy I always like dining with.
Yeah, you have your you used to have your people that you would like to dine with, but I haven't seen that in one of your little.
Oh, well, you know, some days you've got one and some days you don't.
Yeah, is that right? Okay, there's another one, Maya Angelou, words to drink by. Independence is a heady draft, and if you drink it in your mouth, it can have the same effect on your brain as young wine does. It does not matter that its taste is not always appealing. It is addictive, and with each drink, you want more. I never could figure out anything Maya Angelou said.
Well, everybody thinks differently. You know, that's
what is
how
it, it, the poet? It's in the, it's up to the listener of the poet. You mentioned bouillabaisse in here twice.
I did?
Yes.
Well, I had a really good one about a week ago.
Yeah? Where?
It was did you say vichyssoise?
Nope, I said bouillabaisse.
Bouillabaisse. So I'm sorry. Same part of the world, but wrong.
We were talking yesterday
item.
To Pete about Pete. His bouillabaisse.
Yeah.
Or his chopino. Those are the same thing, aren't they? Bouillabaisse and chopino.
No, I
one
wouldn't
Italian
say so.
One is Italian and one is French.
Well, yeah, they're related, but they're not exactly the same. You don't see a whole lot of tomato in the Italian style one, or you would see a lot of it in that. Where were we with
well,
this?
Your word today is yeah. actually cataplana.
Cataplana,
which is
right.
a Portuguese seafood stew. So I guess that's the same thing there as
was
bouillabaisse.
The chef who was running.
Chopina.
There was the chef who ran the restaurant in that. Let's see, I think it's a big hotel on Chapatula Street between Girard and.
Between the Ace Hotel?
And
no.
No, we're close.
The one where...
girl's name.
Cafe Adelaide?
You're getting closer.
Oh, gosh, Tom, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. That's my problem.
I don't know.
It'll come to me in a minute, but...
A hotel?
It's a hotel. A pretty big hotel takes up the better part of a whole block. The one of Magazine. Excuse me.
You said
Chapatula.
Between Girard and
the next Lafayette?
Lafayette?
Yeah, I think it would be Lafayette.
I don't know of any hotel between Girard and Lafayette.
Julia. Julia Street is intersects it.
Oh, God.
And that was a lot of work to get to one stinking little.
And we're still not even there. But anyway, go ahead. Keep going. What about it?
What was it again? I've lost. I've completely lost track of this.
We're talking about Chopino.
Chopino.
What is Zarzuela?
Zarzuela
is also part of this little write-up.
There are a lot of dishes that kind of fit that category, and there are a lot of there's a lot of disagreement as to what the exactly right way of doing a bouillabaisse is. Everybody's got a different idea of it.
Yeah.
So, in other words, what is Zarzuela? Zarzuela, that's a Portuguese version of it, I think.
So it's the same thing. Anyway, the word means not only the dish, but also the vessel in which it is cooked. It is a unique clamshell of stainless steel with two round shells connected by a huge latch opposite it. In goes the seafood.
Yeah.
In our part of the world, this would be shrimp, fish, clams, mussels, and maybe lobster, plus smaller amounts of ham and sausage, and fish stock, tomatoes, herbs, onions, and no small amount of cayenne. It's usually on the spicy side. I've seen it served with the same seasoned mayo called roux in France that's used both for enriching and spicing up the flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that became very, very popular again back around 1990-something.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. But this was when there was a trend towards French cooking again. Because French cooking had almost...
French cooking is hot in town right now.
Oh, is it ever? They keep coming, and it's really good, too.
Yeah,
everything I try, I really like.
Yeah, Couvent was really
nice. Couvent was a huge improvement over what I found there the first time.
Well, I liked it the first time, too, but I really like Couvent. I love Justine. Café Degas, I have never been to Café Degas.
No.
And people absolutely swear by Café Degas.
They do, and it's a restaurant that gets better every time I go there.
Mm-hmm.
And has been for as long as I can remember.
But it's pretty much the same place that it's been since the 70s or the 80s. When did
Earlier than that. It came from out of nowhere. It was just kind of a new figure on the scene.
Well, so did Café Degas predate Louis XVI?
It was a guy who was into French cooking, who had as his partner, business partner, a chef who really knew what he was doing. And between the two of them, they came out with this pretty French restaurant, and they would put in some kind of obscure items now and then, but for the most part, it was right down the middle. But it was done well enough that you could stand to eat there and actually really like it. I always have thought it good and very inexpensive for the kind of food they put out.
Yeah, well, they've been sort of the game in town, and doing their own thing while everyone else has sort of come and gone, and they've just
been the stable one.
Also, that would be true of Nanu. How long's Nanu been around?
Let's see, Nanu.
They have,
but that's a one manager guy kind of operation. Danu and his category and all the people he works with, they have an idea. When they first opened up that place,
it's been wildly popular.
Wildly popular. Always has been. And it started out with the crepes, which, to tell you the truth, didn't move me very much.
But you don't like crepes in general, or you don't like theirs?
I like crepes all right, but I'll have one for dessert. I'll have one made with cheese if I am in Paris. Or, you know, something like that. It's it doesn't grab me quite as much. But when they started doing roasted chickens and crepes with real, savory food in them, they became really a force, and they still are. And I have another story to tell about them, but I can't tell it here either.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of stories you'll have to tell me off the air.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, back to your croissant. So the croissant, you say that the mythology of the croissant is that it was invented during the Ottoman Empire's siege of Vienna.
That's right.
And that it represents the crescent of the Islamic invaders.
Uh-huh. A lot of people
and then
say that.
You said you don't believe that.
I don't. I wasn't there to check it out, but it seems to me to be it's strange.
They didn't really enter the world in at least where people recognized it until the 1800s.
Yeah, 1483 to be exact.
Well, that's not the 1800s. So the
1800s. Okay. Well, I was talking about two different.
You're
things.
Talking about the Ottoman Empire siege
yeah,
of Vienna.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, and
actually, it was the siege of Constantinople, but we can. Mm-hmm. We can just die on that.
Anyway, a well-made croissant is a rare thing. Mm-hmm. Most of them that you get in the supermarkets. Oh, those are dreadful. Those are dreadful.
Oh, yeah. They're, they're dry.
They don't even look real.
They don't look real.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, you have to get a croissant at a bakery. Like, Shane Gorringe at Zoe's. He has good croissants.
Yeah, he really he has everything.
Yeah, he's a serious baker. And you know, I used to love Zoe's. I mean, it used to be my holy grail of bakeries. Mm. As a matter of fact, it was right up there with anything that I'd got, or better than I'd gotten in Europe.
Do you know who did a lot of the baking for that operation?
Well, no, not really, because you're about to say our daughter, but that's not true. She wasn't there that long.
Not that long, but she was there.
But she didn't really get to do much baking. So
she did. She decorated more than
that's
baking.
That's your fantasy, but she didn't really.
She got to the point where she could go back there and bake something for you.
Well, she could now, but
you
not,
have to
not
pick her up
time.
From because she not worked like time. A 3-hour day or something. Like
anyway,
that.
The croissant that he does is a really big one. He is a European baker. So if you're a European baker, then you know how to do croissants. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's like what you have to have a really good croissant. You have to have somebody
it's
who
essential.
Has some sort of European background, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's definitely not what you're going to find at a supermarket.
No.
Anywhere in America.
I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
Anyway, so the good ones, according to you, contain so much butter that it's absurd to add any more. They have an interesting mm-hmm. texture that a certain pull to it is quite different from bread. The yeast component, I didn't know that they even had that much yeast in a croissant.
They do. I didn't think they did either. And then one of the bakers told me, where do you get this idea that we don't have a real pastry that we're blowing up? And I said, well, I mean, you don't need to. It just if by putting layer after layer after layer, it all forms into a
You also say that the water content of the butter gives the croissant that intriguing crust that shatters into a million thin flakes. So that's why I like I guess those are the ones that I like, because that's the crusty ones that just sort of flake off. But you say the temptation to warm a croissant is strong.
It is
for
weird.
Me. I would never eat a croissant that isn't warm.
Yeah.
Because to me, they tend to get sort of flaccid, and I like my croissant to be flaky and to make noise when I break it.
I know. Here's a controversy we can maybe fit in the rest of the show. Is it, let's see, you just used a word.
Flakiness?
No, the one right before that.
I don't know. What? Get back to what you were saying.
Yeah. and it was a good one, too.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well. Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, we started the show, folks.
Oh, is it F-L-A-C-C-I-D? Is it flaccid or
flaccid.
Is it flaccid?
I always say flaccid.
You say flaccid, and I say flaccid.
You say flaccid, and I say flaccid.
You hey, you
say,
all are losers
the
now.
Whole thing off. Okay, we started the show with the promotion of the ultimate tailgate party, and I do want to hit that hard because I think it's going to be a fun evening, and in Covington we don't have a lot of things to do, so when we get something to do, it's very exciting. So on Saturday night, and we're going to mention this a lot the rest of the week, so
this
you're
Saturday
probably
night.
Going to get sick of hearing about it. Yes.
Yeah.
This Saturday, the 24th, from 7 to 11 at the Covington Trailhead is the ultimate tailgate party, and this is where you will go for $75 and get to sample all kinds of food, in mostly barbecue, but a lot of different stuff that people who are passionate about their tailgating will be putting forth. Yes, there is a competition to it, and you can vote for it yourself. But just go on and eat and have a great time. All the food and drink that you can eat and drink for $75, Covington Trailhead this Saturday. That's it for us for tonight.
And here comes Count Basie to convince us that this is the end of the program.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
You're listening to WWL FM 105.3 HD2. Good night.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.